You are listening to Nerding Out with Laura on CICK 93.9 FM, Smithers Community Radio. We are broadcasting from the train car located on unceded Cassia territory of the Gidimden clan, home of the Wet'suwet'en Nation. Today, I want to talk about talk, or more specifically, about kids talking. So I was trying to think of a topic and I was having some trouble because my kid is very chatty lately, just wants to chat on her latest interest, which I totally encourage, of Dungeons and Dragons. She had her first session last weekend and now all I can hear about are different classes. Are they warriors, druids, rangers, wizards? Are they humans, elves, dwarves, and all the little facts about each of those? And I hear them over and over and over again. It's lovely, but sometimes it can make it hard to think. And it reminded me of a Kids in the Hall episode. If you're a little bit older like me, you may remember this comedy sketch show. And there was a character of a kid named Gavin who could not stop talking. And I'm going to divert from my usual science stuff to play you a little fun clip of what I'm talking about. Here we go.
So you're painting a chair, hey?
Yeah, that's what I'm doing, all right.
That's why I stopped.
I see.
So I suppose you want me to paint your chair?
No, thanks. I'll do it fine.
Oh, okay. There's this kid in my class, and she lives on her own without any parents or guardians, and she's 8. And she took the number off her house so the cops can't find her to take her to jail, and also she took off the mailbox so they can't send her a letter to say she's in trouble and has to go to jail, and she's 8, like I say.
8, that's young.
Yeah. And in the garage is a skeleton of a coyote, and it's one of those real valuable ones. And that guy from the news already tried to buy it 3 times.
Really?
Yeah. So I suppose you want me to paint your chair?
No, I'm doing fine, thanks.
Okay. These guys? Smoke.
They smoke?
Yeah.
Wow.
And they're bad. And you know what? They taught a dog to smoke. You believe that?
Sure, I believe that.
Yeah, well, it's true. And they taught him to beg for cigarettes, door to door. So right away, when this poor little devil would ring your doorbell with his snaws, you'd know right away what he wanted. So you'd give him a cigarette, and he'd take it back to these guys who waited by the fence to smoke. And they didn't care who saw them smoke. These guys sure smoked.
Really?
I guess I should go.
No, thanks for stopping by.
Okay, I'll stay. Hey, did you ever eat a snowball?
No, I didn't.
Onions is all I eat.
You get the gist. You just heard a clip from Kids in the Hall of a character, a kid character, just chatting away about whatever they can think of, maybe making up some stories, maybe just telling you all the facts about something that they are really interested in. And you want to be a good person. You want to respond. You want to listen. You want to encourage their interests. But sometimes you get a little tired. Anyway, so I thought, gee, what age does this chattiness really happen? So I tried Googling, and of course, a lot of what came up were sort of baby speech development. I guess there's a lot of worried parents out there wondering, when should my kid be speaking? How much should they be speaking? And so that really dominates the search results. And I happened to come across a study which doesn't really answer my question whether someone around 8 years of age is especially chatty or if there's other ages where this sort of nonstop speech crescendo. So I haven't answered that question. But this is a really interesting study that came out in December of 2023 in the journal PNAS. And it's by, I'll read the four authors here, Alika Bergelson, Melanie Soderstrom, Iris Karina Schwartz, and Alexandria Christia. And they were asking, what factors influence children's day-to-day language use? And so they actually captured over 40,000 hours of audio. And this audio was from over 2,500 day-long child-centered audio recordings of 1,000 2- to 4-year-olds from, or no, sorry, 2- to 48-month-olds from 12 countries. 48-month-olds makes me confused. So from 2 months old to 4 years old from 12 different countries spanning 6 continents. And these were from both urban, farmer forager, and subsistence farming contexts. So from all sorts of diverse households. And what they wanted to do is measure what contributes to how much speech 0- to 4-year-olds naturally produce. And so they say that typically developing children readily progress from coos, like baby talk, to complex sentences within just a few years. It's really amazing. Leading some to hypothesize that the universal language abilities of humans develop uniformly, with only a few incidental effects of individual or group-level variations. And yet studies use a variety of proxies, so stand-ins for language development, that find some evidence of variation in early language skills with differences in gender. So I think it's assumed that girls talk more than boys, as well as some differences in that those are raised in socioeconomically privileged households will speak more compared to those in disadvantaged households. So those are a variety of small studies that have found that. And this is like a really huge, major data heavy study that was able to pull in way more information to kind of test those conclusions. Is do all kids develop language the same, and what kind of factors might influence it? Is it gender? Is it socioeconomic status? Those sorts of things. However, the authors found that these studies tend to rely on Western-centric samples, these past studies, and their methods may not reflect everyday language use in children. And they also use individual predictors in a binary way, like do these factors significantly impact the language development or not, while failing to ask the more informative question of how large that relative impact is, especially in sort of everyday speech behavior and not in, say, like a speech therapist office. So I do want to delve into that, and there's actually a recording available of someone just about 10 minutes questioning the actual author of this study that I want to share as well. But let's take another moment to another break, and I'm going to pull up a very vintage Bass Nectar song. I remember listening to this, and then I was trying to find it on Spotify, and I kept scrolling down the albums and down and down and down until I had to go all the way to 2007 to find a song that I remembered that I just popped into my head to go with this subject. So I guess I'm fairly old because Bass Nectar is still putting out music, but if you scroll all the way back to 2007, you will find the song Bomb the Block. Here it is.
Look at this! Look at this new thing. Look at this.
Look at this. hustle attitude, and rolling attitude. True definition of hip hop, my crew and I as individual make hot residual. Mindset incriminal, but yes, subliminal. Signs and rhyme, please check your racket. Pimping ain't so easy, and I'll never be half stepping in the streets. Got me laughing, pulling out guns and shit. Lift this water when heads and first. Lift this.
You are listening to Smithers Community Radio, CICK 93.9 FM. You're listening specifically to Nerding Out with Laura. We just heard Bass Nectar, Bomb the Blocks, coming vintage Bass Nectar from 2007. And I picked that clip just because it had that little bit of the kid asking, which kind of sticks in my mind. What's this new thing? So we're talking about children's speech abilities, what causes them to speak early or late, or their breadth of their vocabulary. And then later I want to get into a bit of when kids talk a lot and how to deal with it. So we're looking at a study from December of 2023, published in PNAS. So as I mentioned before, they collected these 40,000 hours of audio from these child-centered audio recordings to see sort of what affects children's speech abilities. And so they employed this LENA system, so L-E-N-A, which captures what children hear and say across an entire day through small wearable recorders. And they call this an ecologically valid sampling method that reduces observer effects. So from shorter recordings, and also in contrast to other studies that have used like parental reports of speech or just like these short in-person assessments and that. So this is like kids actually in their day-to-day life in their households have these recorders that are recording their entire day. And so obviously that is a ton of data. And so there are these algorithms that the LENA system uses that estimate who is speaking when and use automated counts of adult and child speech. And So they define child speech as the quantity of children's speech-related vocalizations. So this can include protophones, babbles, syllables, words, or sentences, but not laughing or crying. And they measure those per hour. And the adult talk is defined as near and clear vocalizations per hour attributed to adults that the algorithm can recognize. And so they say that these aren't merely capturing chattiness or repetition. So they're also looking at measures of diversity and language quality to come up with their results. And so just briefly, very interestingly, they found the amount of adult talk, the age, of course, that one's not surprising, and if the kid has a normal development, were significant predictors of how much speech children's gain in from 2 months to 4 years old. So I think the surprising one there is the how much adult talk they're hearing is directly influencing how much they speak. And this really contrasts smaller studies that found that socioeconomic status that is based on maternal education has a big effect. But this study found that there was no effect based on socioeconomic status on how much these kids vocalize. And neither did multilingualism. So before, there was a lot of studies showing that if kids are bilingual or multilingual, they may be delayed in their speech. So they take longer, but then they'll speak multiple languages. And also some studies suggesting that girls talk more than boys. So this study found that it didn't matter if kids are multilingual, it didn't matter what gender they are, doesn't matter what sort of household they're coming from. Really the big one is age. Are they developing without any developmental disorders? And big one, how much adults are talking around them or to them? So I could get more into this myself, but really helpfully, the journal PNAS has their own little science session podcasts. So this is just a 9-minute clip of them interviewing the actual authors on their study. So I thought I would play that rather than blab on myself. So here you are. I'll just play that now.
Alex, Elika, what did we know or suppose before this study about the factors influencing the production of language by children?
There have been literally thousands of studies on how babies learn language and lots of observations as well. And based on these smaller studies and shorter observations, we got the impression that all kids exposed to spoken language who can hear will learn to talk, and kids who are exposed to sign language will learn to sign. That happens. But we also noticed that there was some variability, and so it was unclear what are the factors that explain that variability. Is it the child's environment? Is it the child's gender? Is it the fact that they're exposed to multiple languages? Some of the results suggested that these factors mattered. Some of them suggested they didn't matter so much.
I think that two sort of baseline, of course, this will matter factors that were already on the table were that how old a kid is and whether they have a clinical diagnosis or a high risk for a clinical diagnosis. Those are clearly things that influence how much speech a baby through older kid produces.
What types of clinical diagnoses would influence speech acquisition?
These are things like prematurity, very low birth weight, diagnosis or family risk for something called developmental language delay. There are links between autism spectrum disorders and language, hearing loss if you're acquiring a spoken language.
Tell me about the device that the child wears for the day-long recording.
It's a device that was created in the early 2000s. It's about, I would say, the size of a credit card, but thicker.
So it's the weight of like a lipstick.
We also buy t-shirts, for instance, and have a little pocket that has exactly the right size for this. So you turn it on and you slip it into the pocket. And then the child just goes about their day.
And then at the end of the day, so 16 hours is the maximum recording capacity, they give it back to the researcher who then plugs it in and it runs through an algorithm that pulls off the audio and runs it through this machine learning process that parses it into little clips of not what was said, but who was talking and when.
That's really special. That's a child-centered viewpoint that we hadn't explored before. We have 12 countries, 6 continents.
What did you find that was expected?
As expected, we found that, in fact, how old a child is, whether or not they have a clinical diagnosis or a high risk for one, and how much language they hear, all contributed to how much language they produced. So just on the simple sort of yes, no, was there an effect of those three things? Yes, there was. And if there hadn't been, we would have been quite surprised. So children produce 66 more vocalizations per hour with each year of life. And for every 100 vocalizations they heard per hour, they produced 27 more vocalizations. Now, this tells us nothing about the cause of what's going on in these cases, right? So you can imagine that prematurity and how old you are and how much talk you hear, those all have very different avenues of influencing how much talk the child produces.
What did you find that was unexpected?
I think that one of the results where we had bets going on in different directions within the team was socioeconomic status, maternal education. And the result, at least in our data, is that it's not a significant predictor. It actually doesn't explain very much. Another one was whether the child spoke or heard multiple languages. I know that some of the reception that this paper has had has been from early childhood educators who get a lot of questions from parents and a lot of push from experts, particularly in France, to avoid speaking to children in multiple languages. And they were really surprised and really interested in hearing that actually multilingualism was not related to children speaking less. This was not a negative factor, at least in our data.
By the same token, there's the received wisdom that girls are chatty and are better, more fluid language users than boys, and we don't find any evidence for that, at least how we're measuring it.
That said, there's a key caveat, right?
This isn't the type of approach that lets us definitively say something like maternal education or gender or multilingualism could never contribute to some aspect of children's language development. What we're saying is the way that we look at it here, it does not have a measurable connection to the children's speech production measure that we collected.
What are the implications of this study for parents, educators, and others involved in early language development?
We try to be very careful on threading the needle of not going too far beyond what we have actually shown. We did not have any kind of intervention where we coached parents to behave a certain way and measured the outcomes of that. There are folks doing that work. What our results point to is that when there's more speech happening around the child produces more speech.
This study is observational, and we find this association between how much people talk around the child and how much the child talks. So we don't necessarily derive from this specific tips for parents. That's not to say that a stimulating environment, having a good connection with your child, won't be fun and rewarding. That could be the case, but it's not something that we can tell from our data.
So is it a bad idea to pick up a book and read it to your kid? Probably not. But we don't speak directly to, you know, if you read this many books a day, you will grow up to be this big and strong, right? That isn't anything like what we're able to say here.
What are any other caveats or limitations of this study?
Most of these countries are high-income countries. Most of the parents whose data have been provided are raising their families in an urban setting. In reality, almost half of children are being raised in rural settings. A fair proportion of our data was collected in North America from kids who are learning American English. And it's not the case that 40% of the world is growing up speaking American English. So I think we still have quite a bit to go from the 10 or so languages that were represented here to representing the 7,000 languages that are spoken or signed in the world.
There's all kinds of languages and upbringing circumstances that we have not captured at all. For instance, sign languages, which are hugely important for understanding human language more generally, are not something you can capture with an audio recording. If other people want to use these data to ask more questions, there's a process where we connect you with the people whose data it is, and in general, want to be quite supportive of other efforts to ask and answer other questions with the data that we have.
Thanks.
So you just heard a recording from PNAS Science Sessions and some of the main authors of this study, Everyday Language Input and Production in 1,001 Children from 6 Countries, or Continents, sorry. And yeah, I really enjoyed that little interview there. Although one person noted that the interviewer sounds like an AI voice. So I do wonder if that's a real person or if they just added that, like maybe they pre-recorded the answers from being typed out and then added an AI interviewer. anyway, yeah, you can tell that I am not AI. That would be very advanced, I think, to get my sort of babbling in there. And so one thing I really like about that is that they're really stressing that this is a great observational study. It's like way more information that we've had before. It's putting in these new inputs for us. But there are limitations to these, to all studies. And so to hear from the authors, the scientists themselves, talk about what the data means and what it might mean, what it might not mean, is really great. Because if you look at a lot of news articles, they'll just pull a few things and they want to really pump up those results. And so I appreciate this more complex, nuanced look into a study. And so what I want to say is that this is a really cool data set, and you know, it's interesting that they found socioeconomic status, gender, and multilingualism as not affecting the amount of speech these kids are producing. We want to take these findings with a grain of salt, you know, like we should look at it in more ways, different ways of measuring. And yeah, it's just a new set of data to add to our wide understanding. And so one scientist responding to this study, there was a little short article in science.org. So this comes from Michael Frank, a cognitive scientist at Stanford University, who was not involved with the work, commented, The findings don't necessarily mean kids speak more because they hear more speech, he says. Instead, adults might talk back more to kids who produce more language. So it's good to ask these questions. And the scientists who did do the studies say that parents should not feel that they need to aim a torrent of speech at their kids, but it's a great idea just to talk to your kids and to interact with them and to treat them like communicative partners. Not because you're hoping they're going to, you know, produce more speech and become these amazing linguists, but just to support them, love them, and care for them. So I think that's a really great closing sentence for this particular study. And yeah, so I have been playing a lot of recordings today, but let's take another music break and I'm going to play something new. So pulling from my list, I subscribe to the A-List from Exclaim magazine so that every Friday they load new Canadian songs up. And so here's one, Barcelona, I'll Be Free by Grievous Angels, from the album Last Call for Cinderella.
I got two jobs, I got three roommates, I'm a woman of 43. I got two jobs, I got three roommates, I'm a woman of 43. I got two jobs, I got three roommates, I'm a woman of 43. Got a dream that keeps me going, of a place I've never seen. So I save what I can in this gig economy. So I save what I can in this gig economy. So I save what I can in this gig economy. I know that where I'm going, Barcelona, I'll be free. No pastorella, no pastorella. Comrade, give me your hand. Barcelona, I'll be free. Greasy Brendan is the foreman, and his hands, they won't stay still. Greasy Brendan is the foreman, and
greasy. Brendan is the foreman, and his hands, they won't stay still. I made myself a promise, that man I'm gonna kill. No pass around. I'm a woman of 43. I got two jobs. I got three roommates. I'm a woman of 43. I got two jobs. I got three roommates. I'm a woman of 43. Got a dream that keeps me going, of a place I've never seen.
You're listening to CICK 93.9 FM, Smithers Community Radio. This is Nerding Out with Laura. You just heard Barcelona, I'll Be Free by the Grievous Angels. They've been around for quite some time, a Canadian alternative country band they're labeled as. So they're out, I think, in Toronto area, and that's from their new album, Last Call for Cinderella. I'd like to take a moment to thank a sponsor. Let's go with Bugwood Bean. It's been a while since I've thanked you. You're looking great these days with the sunshine. It's a good time to go chill out at Bugwood Bean and hang out with some friends. There's some events coming up, so just looking through my list here. We've got Elcon and Rosebush playing tomorrow, Saturday, June 22nd at Smithers Legion. 19 plus, $20. Tickets at Mountain Eagle Books. The doors open at 7 and music at 8. Just a little note here from the Senior Supporting Housing Collaborative. A Smithers group who've been working for 6 years trying to get government and Northern Health to build more senior assisted living housing in Smithers. They currently have over 40 Bulkley Valley seniors waiting to get into the Bulkley Lodge and the Meadows. And, oh, so last week they had their parade at down Main Street. And so if you check that out, I hope it went well. I didn't actually see that myself, so I guess this is getting to be old news since that happened last week. But maybe check them out if you're interested in the petition. They say Smithers PharmaSave on 4th Avenue and Twin Valley in Beer and Wine Store. You can sign the petition if you're interested. And also, it is our membership drive this month. If you are not yet a member, please become one. You can go to smithersradio.com, click membership. You could also call our station, 250-847-8769. I can't promise anyone will be here to pick up the phone, though. Or you can email us at info@smithersradio.com. We also have open houses on Saturday mornings, so when the farmers market's going on, you can come check out our radio station in this antique train car. Super cool. And then you can get your membership then. You can also pick up your little package that you get. You get a CICK sticker and a handcrafted ceramic medallion. You also get event discounts, access to exclusive parties. You can win cool things, and you also get to support community radio. So it's only $25 for an individual or $60 for a family. So become a member. And back to our kids talking a lot. So I've been trying to deal with supporting and loving my child while they kind of talk over the facts of Dungeons and Dragons over and over and over and over, which I'm actually interested in, but it gets a little tiring after hearing 7 days of the same thing. I'm just pulling here from an article from understood.org. Why some kids talk nonstop. Kids love to talk, a lot of kids do. If they're excited about something, they might go on and on. As kids get older, they typically realize on their own that maybe there are certain social cues on when to stop talking for a moment. But you know, being a talker isn't bad, it's great. Talkative kids are charming, funny, and interesting. But when the conversation gets endless or it's happening at the wrong time and place, it can turn people off. And it can also make it hard for them when they're making friends in their own social groups. And so some kids may just be passionate about their topic and want to tell you about it. Some might talk a lot if they're a bit stressed. So instead of retreating, they kind of talk to overcome that. And some kids just have trouble with social skills in general. So picking up on social cues like body language and facial expressions. So they may not notice how other people are reacting to their talking. There's also a bit of a role of self-control here. So that's a pretty complex skill that allows kids to manage their thoughts, actions, and emotions. And this is also called executive function. And of course, it's not just kids. Many adults work on their executive functioning skills as well. So with those who have to work a little bit more on their self-control, perhaps, they may talk nonstop or interrupt others a lot. And this can also come with having trouble taking turns, getting frustrated easily and giving up quickly, being unable to stand criticism, having outbursts or tantrums, or being very restless. And of course, if you know a bit about ADHD, those are all symptoms of ADHD as well. And so it's definitely something that those with ADHD will struggle with, but others not. It doesn't necessarily mean that someone has ADHD. But we can be really kind when we maybe need a break to think about our radio shows and don't need to hear every single fact about druids in Dungeons and Dragons. You can help your kids by acknowledging this. So there's some tips you can practice: stop, lock, look, and listen. So show kids how to stop every few sentences and kind of look around and judge the tone of the room and how others in the conversation are reacting. You can role play conversations. So you practice active listening. So you talk about something and then have them ask questions about what you've been talking about. You have them talk about something and you ask them questions, just sort of modeling that polite conversation. I'm not saying kids have to be like these perfect examples of politeness, but just sort of talking about the give and take, right? I'm sure you've been at a party where there's one person that kind of dominates the conversation and maybe needs to consider the give and take of a conversation maybe a little bit more. So really use empathy, praise kids in a way that builds their self-esteem, point out when they managed to stop talking before it became too much, or that, oh, I noticed that you stopped to listen to what this other kid wanted to say. That was really great of you. Of course, you're going to see other kids doing the same thing. Your kid is going to try want to get in a conversation and the other kid's not letting them in. So that's another thing, is that sometimes if kids feel like they're never going to get their break in the conversation, they may feel like they have to monopolize their moment as much as they can because they feel like they might not get a chance again. So, you know, just maybe make sure that you're also looking around and taking social cues and taking a moment to pause if you're talking a lot and let the kids jump in. And so just sort of that modeling is a really great way to do that. So yeah, I still don't know if there's a certain age where sort of that chattiness peaks and maybe the ability to take turns in conversations or read the room kicks in more later. I still don't know that, so I'll continue researching as just a fun little topic. So I'm pretty much done with this topic now, and let's play some more music. On my list, I have... oh my goodness, this name is so long, I can't even read it. The Mysterious Disappearance of Etta Place by Chiesa.
I will not pick flowers for you, for I choose not to kill. But instead, I'll take your hand and show you a pair of wild daisies in full bloom, never before seen by human eyes. They stand unaware of our presence, not knowing that our minds are like leeches clinging to their soft, innocent petals. They stand naked in all their glory, branching from the same stem, stretching for the sun as it dries the tears from their face. We'll go now, leaving them undisturbed, and stop when the sun calls us. Then we too will be naked and eat of each other all that we are. I will be of you as you will be of me. I will be of you as you will be of me. And then the sun will only see one.
Just know you're dog, an empty grave wrote my name. You never do go back from where you came.
That which we give of ourselves to each other. And then the sun will only see one.
So you just heard a new release from Chiesa, The Mysterious Disappearance of Etta Place. And so Chiesa is a Canadian singer and multi-instrumentalist from Calgary. And it seems like, she hasn't released very much recently until now. So it's pretty exciting. We just got this. There's a couple more songs. And I haven't actually listened to them yet. So why don't we just continue with this artist? I'm going to play Dancing and Crying, and then I will be out. So, see y'all.
You can bring your mind. Tonight we'll dance. think is funny.